This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union Podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the Shoop Shooping voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning. It's still morning, just about. Or is it early afternoon
it's
now?
Nowhere near the morning.
And we're actually, we're in person today.
We're in person today.
Very close to each other. This table's a little bit too small. I feel like we're less than a foot away from each other, really staring each other in the face.
Yes, we are in Waltham Abbey, which you suggested as a meetup.
Good call in terms of location.
Great for me, yeah.
No expense spared. For the studio that you've hired us.
No, so we are in Ant Farm Studios in Waltham Abbey, which is pleasant enough.
That's perfect.
But it's Baltic.
It's really cold.
Yeah.
It's really cold. We're both wearing very thick jackets right now.
New jacket for you then?
It is a new jacket. Yeah. Borrowed it from a friend, actually. Oh, okay. And I won't be giving it back. It's really good. Really nice. Perfect for football.
So it is Baltic.
Yes.
And you are the Shoop Shooping voice of goalkeeping because you've literally just said that you went skiing this morning.
I went skiing this morning, yeah. So that was Baltic.
What?
Yeah, indoor ski dome at Milton Keynes.
Okay.
Yeah, just went and had a go.
What was the feeling behind that? I mean,
I have been skiing. I went skiing last February for the first time. Obviously, you cannot do it while playing football. It's in the contract. You can't do sports such as that. But I am retired, so I can now go skiing. So I do intend to go in February, all being well. So because of that, I thought, oh, little opportunity. It's one of these. It's good. Like, it's really good. But it just takes... The problem is it takes so long to get up the hill. It's obviously indoors. It takes so long to get up there. And it takes about 3 seconds to come back down. So it is good. But in terms of like the practice, the experience, it's a bit long for what you actually get. But no, it was good. Nice way to start the day.
Okay. Bring this back to goalkeeping.
How can I bring it back to goalkeeping?
So we've not done that recently with The Voice, and we always used to. So
we used to. Go on, you must have something up your sleeve. I mean, skiing, it's... I don't know. It's, I mean, look, obviously a lot of the things involved in skiing is balance, you know, and good coordination, speed, turning, like using the knees, using the hips. I mean, it's really bad for the knees, actually. My knee was killing me this morning. That wasn't enjoyable at all.
I tell you what it does do
is
that it takes you a while to reach those dizzy heights of goalkeeping. And then in one fell shoop, 3 seconds later, you're back down.
There you go. And I did fall over this morning as well.
Really?
So there you go. Yeah. And then I got back up.
Setbacks paved the way for
comebacks.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, some talking points, Richard, from this weekend. Starting in the Premier League, it's Brighton 1, Southampton 1. First and foremost, a Premier League debut for Joe Lumley.
Excellent. Very, very good. Huge credit to Joe, to be honest, because he's gone into Southampton last year in that three role where he had been a regular in the Championship for a couple of years. So it was quite a big decision to do that. But it was always with this in mind where, you know, being with a team that had a really good chance of promotion, kind of hoping that you could make your way to eventually becoming the two. And we see that with a lot of goalkeepers now where they'll join as number threes, but with the intention of becoming a two, not necessarily being the stereotypical number three where it might be a goalkeeper a little bit later in their career that, you know, maybe winding down to an extent. But with Joe, it was very much right, can I go here? Can I make that way to number two? Which interestingly he did for a large part of last season. But of course, when it came to the crunch, they did put Alex McCarthy back in. But again, he's worked hard over the summer, waiting for the opportunity. And as his football sometimes wasn't the best day for Alex, I think he picked up a knock as well. And of course, it's given Joe an opportunity. And I can relate a lot in that, you know, I played a few games in the Premier League, sort of similar circumstances where I wasn't involved in the team that got promoted the season before, the Watford team, but then came back from my loan at Blackburn. And again, sometimes it's right place at the right time, but what is key is that you've put the work in the meantime. You know, not a lot of people would have seen what Joe's done over the last year, the work he's done with Dean Thornton, the goalkeeper coach. And it's for moments like this, you just never know when the opportunity might come. And big credit to him to make your Premier League debut. No chance for the goal conceded. Really solid first performance and now an opportunity in the best league in the world.
It was one apiece. Mm. It could have been 2-1 to Southampton, but for a goal that was disallowed in the second half. So your view on this one, it was scored by Cameron Archer. Mark Verbruggen was alleged to have been disturbed by the involvement of Adam Armstrong.
Yeah, that's such a grey area, this. And we're probably going to talk about this for a while and we will come to no conclusion. That's my feeling. Because, look, does Bart Verbruggen do something different if Armstrong isn't there? Yes, he does, because naturally when the ball's being crossed in, you do have a glance, peripheral vision, you know where the shot's going to come in from. So initially he's thinking it's going to be Armstrong, so he's taking his position according to that. Had he not have been there, he might have taken an extra step ready for where the shot was going to come from, but essentially he wouldn't have saved it anyway. So I can see exactly why Russ Martin's aggrieved. I can see at the same time why it's disallowed, because of course the goalkeeper will make a decision based on the guy that was stood offside. So yeah, I don't know. Go on. You tell me what you think.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm quite indifferent, actually. I, at the time, was fuming because, one, you want to see the goal scored. You'd like to see Southampton win away at Brighton just for the good of the Premier League. But I think, so I was listening to Match of the Day. Dion Dublin made a good point about the fact that Adam Armstrong is there and Bart Verbruggen's attention is on Adam Armstrong. So just purely by that fact, he is interfering with play to a certain extent. I don't think we can bring in the fact of whether the goalkeeper would save the effort or not. I just don't think that's part of the conversation, because who knows what might happen in that instant. Maybe he will fling himself across the goal and he'll save it. Obviously he's not going to, but I just don't think that can ever be in the conversation. So I'm still undecided, really. I'm actually leaning towards the fact that it probably was the right call. I don't like the fact it took, 5 minutes for it to be decided, which is ridiculous. So yeah, I think that maybe it was the right call, just because of the fact that when that cross came in, Bart Verbruggen was looking directly at Adam Armstrong.
Yeah, okay. Do you know, I'll agree with you for this point, this time. It's unusual, but I'm very much of the same mentality. Like you say, you can't necessarily take into account what ends up happening thereafter, because it would then be a completely different situation. The finish might even be different. You know, again, if the goalkeeper's taken an extra step and it isn't quite as big an area to aim at, is the finish quite the same? Like you say, it's the unknown. I guess the whole point is that it has taken his focus in that moment and he has positioned himself according to the fact that it is the player that's offside that was going to shoot. So yeah, I guess we 60-40 that it was the correct decision.
And there's a flick of the leg as well, and that's what they were talking about. So if Adam Armstrong doesn't flick that leg, is it then?
But this is where it's so far from being black and white. That's my issue with it. Yeah. It's so grey. But then I don't know. You can't go back to the, I think it was old school, wasn't it, where you're almost offside if you're offside. Like, you know, and you can't go back to that, because I like, you know, so many examples where players aren't interfering with play, but this is sat somewhere smack bang in the middle where it's such a small detail, and in the end it was costly for Southampton.
Okay, so that's a grey area. If we go over to the London Stadium, West Ham 2, Arsenal 5, the fifth goal was a penalty scored by Bukayo Saka, but it was due to a foul from Lucas Fabianski on Gabriel. Pen or no pen?
Yeah, again, this is going to be a really vague pod, isn't it? We're already going down the road of sitting on the fence. We're going to feel those splinters, but I don't know. It's one that, as a goalkeeper, like, you know, there's no intention there. The intention is to punch the ball. Credit to the lad that he's jumped that little bit higher and got his head there first. So, of course, by the letter of the law, in the same way that it was outfield and two players going for a tackle, the one that gets there first and wins the ball, the other one comes in a split second too late, he's given away the foul. So I suppose using that as a metric, then yeah, I guess it is a foul, because he's hasn't quite got the ball. The player's got there first. He's caught him in the head. So it is a foul. I mean, it absolutely bugs the life out of me listening to Gary Neville, which you're forcing me to do, by the way. Like I told you, I'm so good when I'm in Dubai. I can watch it in beIN Sports. I can watch it on the local channels or what have you. And now I'm being forced to listen to his commentary, which this weekend, my word. I mean, that's another conversation. But yes, I would probably go foul on this.
Does this set a precedent then? Because we've seen so many of these over the years in football where a goalkeeper comes out and catches the player after the player has headed a corner.
It probably does now. I think it shifted, because it was very much, it felt, and again, look, whether the rules have actually changed in regards to this, I don't know, if I'm honest, but it was very much, certainly when I played, you didn't ever worry about that. You didn't ever think like, oh, I might give a pen away here. You kind of felt if you were coming for a punch, it was just part and parcel. You know, some of the old cliches come out. If you're going to come for it, go the whole way, go through everybody, take everyone out, come with violence. That's one of the favourite ones at the moment, isn't it? So
that's the point. He's come with violence. He's there. Come so with what violence. Does Roy Keane say to that?
Yeah, I know. Again, damned if you do, damned if you don't. So, yeah, I think it kind of is now. There's been a few examples of this, and I think the fact that this is the way it's gone, I think that will be the case moving forward. If you're coming for a punch, you don't quite get there, but you do catch a player, I think it will be a penalty moving forward.
Should he save the pen? Let me ask
No, he shouldn't. No, no. I mean, again, and I felt like this was almost, you see this a lot, where Gary Neville's giving him some stick for the penalty itself, then he's got fingertips to the penalty. It cannot be an expectation. Is there a goalkeeper that saves his penalty? Yes, possibly. You know, but it cannot be an expectation that you make this save. If he makes that save, it's a brilliant penalty save because it's driven in the corner at pace. He's got down well enough and just got fingertips to it. Couldn't get enough to get it around the post. So to say that he should save it is ludicrous.
Okay. Moving on to Stamford Bridge, Chelsea 2, Aston Villa 0, a game that you were at.
I was.
So, an eventful first half for Emi Martinez. He's made a really good claim from across. Moments later, he's passed the ball straight to Nicholas Jackson. He's then fractured his finger as a result of that. He's going to be out for a period of time. Continued on in that first half and then picked up a back pass. Was it a back pass?
Right, so it was a really entertaining first half because, and being at the game, I was able to, and I don't really watch a lot of what's going on in the middle. I've got no real interest, lots of people running around, but watching the two goalkeepers, it was interesting watching Martinez because he looked uncomfortable quite early on. Like he got the back, you could see he was feeling his back after the cross. Then obviously after that pass, his finger, and you could see him signaling to the bench in the first half. So I knew he was coming off at half time because a few times he was signaling over basically saying, I'm not right here. I'll talk about the pass first because that, and again, I think this was shortly after catching the cross and he had the back issue and the ball was played back to him. He takes a really sloppy touch, which is unlike him, never really gets the ball into the right place. And in the end, I mean, it's just something you don't see Emi Martinez do. So I can only think, and this is again, based more on personal experience, that he's still thinking about the pain that he's got, or he's not quite in the moment because it was a poor touch, never really gets the ball in the right place. Hence where he goes to pass it. It comes off his heel. Like, and the ball's not moving, you know, so it's such a schoolboy error, something you just don't see him do. So I do think that psychologically he's been impacted by the fact he's got the injury, and then of course he's got a further injury after that when diving for the ball, but at the same time produces some great moments. A lot of what he did the first half was very good. Great claim on the cross, big save on the pass back. I felt for him on the actual awarding of the pass back because he makes a very good save down to his left. He's then going to pick the ball up and the defender kills him a bit by just touching it. And at that point, you've already committed to pick it up. It's very tough to change your mind in that moment. So I just think that's just one of those things where the defender's worried about the attacker coming in. Emi Martinez, you know, just thought he was going to leave it so he could pick it up. It's just a miscommunication and that resulted in the pass back. But yeah, a bit of a mixed day for him. But I do think a lot of that was down to the fact that he did pick up a couple of knocks.
Interesting situation now. And we're finding it now with a few teams. Obviously, Tottenham have got Vicario out. To have Martinez out now over the festive period, it's going to be interesting to see what Villa do.
Yeah, it will be. Credit to Olsen because he came on. I thought he did fine. You know, obviously very different in certain ways to Martinez, but yeah, it's never easy coming on in the second half when you're 2-0 down in the way that he did. But I thought he looked sharp on a couple of occasions. Distribution was good. You know, he's got quite a nice way about him, good body language. So I'm sure he'll be more than fine to step in. But as you say, you often see that when you come into the January window, there is decisions to make. Do they want to then bolster the goalkeeping unit? Same at Tottenham. You know, Fraser Forster started very well. They've got Brandon Austin there as well. So you think they'll stay as they are for now, but naturally the press pick up on it and straight away there's different goalkeepers being linked with Tottenham, being linked with Villa, which is the way that it is. So certainly one to keep an eye on. My guess is they'll stay put for now and see where things lie in Jan.
A hot topic this season on the podcast has been Robert Sanchez. We've covered it extensively. So you were at the game on the weekend, so you can now make an informed decision having seen him play live. Because if we go back to the commentary, and we won't dwell on this, but just annoying to listen to on Sunday, purely for the fact that every time he did something right, it was preceded with, doesn't normally, you know, he's let himself down this season, but, or, yeah, or you know, been a couple of occasions this season where he's not quite done well, but
yeah,
every time.
Oh, the narrative. And obviously the fact that, and it is a really interesting situation there, that Jorgensen played in the week and did very, very well. Again, naturally, you've got two top goalkeepers at Chelsea, but I thought he was brilliant on the day. You know, he's made a really big one-on-one save from Watkins. Some of the distribution was outstanding. A side volley he did out to the left side. Again, played out all day. So proactive in his positioning. Came for a few two big crosses. Faultless, really, really good performance. But as you say, you're listening to the commentary. When does that then change to it just being positive? You know, all the other way around, where the commentary is more along the lines of, you know, it's almost when he makes a mistake, it's uncharacteristic. Like David De Gea had it for a long time where he was excellent. And for probably a season, whenever he made an error, it was always an uncharacteristic error until that started to shift. And then it started to be people getting on De Gea's back. But yeah, it's frustrating because there was a couple of other situations. Actually, one that I don't think was picked up on in the or the clips that I've looked at. But, you know, where you've got other examples, like I'm sure you saw the goal that Ortega conceded, the first ball that was whipped in. That is a ball that a Sanchez will save. But again, it's not necessarily noticed, the fact that Sanchez and many others now in the Premier League are taking up such advanced positions, they're cutting out balls such as that. But that's never going to go down as a goalkeeping error, not even touched on by the commentators, which I fully understand. But this is where these goalkeepers are playing in such a proactive manner, there needs to be some form of credit or understanding as to what they're doing. And that's the issue, where you've got the dinosaurs of the world who are, you know, some of the pundits that are still seeing goalkeeping as, you know, and don't get me wrong, there's some greats back in the day, your Neville Southalls, your Peter Schmeichels, but it's a completely different game now and goalkeepers have to be completely different. And I feel like we've still got the commentators that are talking about goalkeeping as if it is these types of characters which were phenomenal in their day and I'm sure would be phenomenal now, but they'd have to be very, very different in terms of how they played now.
Speaking of Ortega, it's a lovely segue, mate. Well done.
Oh, thank you.
Straight to Anfield. Liverpool 2, Man City 0. Before we get on to a really good save from Kwemi Kelleher, Edison dropped. Your thoughts?
It's interesting for the fact that it's normally teams that are down the bottom of the league. Like, and again, we'd have to get some stats on this at some point, where so many managers will just change a goalkeeper. You know, forget the fact that it might be game after game, their XG is low and they should be losing all the games. They're almost just looking for something to make an impact. And so often it will just be the goalkeeper that they change. Now this, where the similarity is obviously given the run that City have had. Now, the bit I would say with Edison is the amount of credit that he's built over the years. I don't think he'll be overly happy with this because, yeah, the team are playing very poorly, but it is essentially the same thing where they're looking to change something to change something. And so often it's the goalkeeper. So disappointing to see from my point of view, but at the same time, we see it up and down the league. It's just very rare that you see, certainly, there's almost certain goalkeepers, Alisson's, Edison's, obviously now Raya at Arsenal, there's certain goal, Onana at United, like certain goalkeepers you just don't expect to ever be dropped, you know, certainly given their standings at the bigger clubs. So yeah, really surprising.
And that save from Gallagher, so there was, I think, around 10 minutes left in that game. If City score at that moment, it's a possibly very different result. They could have come back and said, who knows, the way they're playing, maybe not. But if they did score, it would have set up quite an interesting finale. So that's a big save from Gallagher, that one-on-one with Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, it's a big moment. And again, you know, we talk about narratives and there's certainly a very positive one that sits around Kelleher, and credit to him, it's fully deserved because it just seems the big moments he's getting them right. And again, that isn't by luck, that isn't by chance. I think that in terms of his psychological makeup, he just seems so unflappable in terms of how he's operating and the level that he's operating at. It'd be very interesting in that, and I'm saying this and someone might correct me, but it doesn't seem like he's had a major downturn yet. You know, for all the games that he stepped in, more often than not, and it's still, his frustration is probably that it's still a bit where he's considered to be a two and there's like a, you know, he's stepping in when he needs to step in. So I do wonder whether that's frustration for him in that he's barely put a foot wrong since he's come in. And it's not just getting by and doing okay and being at the level. He has been above and beyond that, like so many key moments. As you say, that goes in, it's a completely different end to the game, but he just looks so comfortable. And again, I use that word, unflappable.
So three more saves to mention before we finish up on the Premier League. Two of which, I guess you could say, were inconsequential. One that wasn't was Fraser Forster from Raul Jimenez. That was Tottenham 1, Fulham 1. Made a really good save in the Europa League against Roma too. So stepping in admirably so far is Forster. But the other two, Mads Hermansson from Kevin Schaarder. That was Brentford 4, Leicester 1. But the one I really want to talk about is Aaron Muric. What a save this was. So it was Forest 1, Ipswich 0. It was a double save, I guess you could say, but in the same motion. Yeah. Alternate hands.
it's really creative because he's had to react quickly to make the first save. And I think it then comes back down off the bar, but it's dropping for the lad just to have a simple tap in. But yeah, as you mentioned, essentially all in one movement, he's had the awareness as the ball's dropping to get something on it and get it away from danger as it's come down. Yeah, phenomenal goalkeeping. And to mention the others, big save, Fraser Forster. And this is, you know, you talk about ones and twos, like a number two, the biggest thing is when a moment like this happens, where you've got to step in, you've got to be ready. The work that you've been doing behind the scenes for the last few months that nobody really knows about, no one's really spoke about him for a period of time, suddenly you're stepping in, biggest stage, and having to perform, all eyes on you. And I think that's where you've got someone with the experience, the character of a Fraser Forster, he's showing that that's exactly why they've had him in that role. You know, Vicario's got all sorts of credit over the last 18 months or so, and rightly so, but you know, to have someone like that behind that you know can step in and have the mentality to do that. And lastly, to mention Hermansen's save, because I thought it was a brilliant save. This in the end obviously didn't necessarily count for too much given the scoreline, but I thought his footwork and athleticism to get up into the top corner and tip that over the bar, world class save.
So we're going to cover the FA Cup second round in a moment, but first the Championship, where there were a couple of triple save, one triple save I think, and then the other was a double save, but with four motions going on at the same time. So Dan Grimshaw, he shipped four at Bristol City as Blackpool were soundly, Plymouth, sorry, were soundly beaten. But it took them 18 shots to score at 0-0. Incredible triple save.
Yeah, oh, phenomenal. Very, very good. And I think it's fair to say he was probably their standout performer on the day, which is concerning for Plymouth. Certainly, you know, conceding 10 goals in two games, never nice for a goalkeeper, but certainly he's keeping his levels very high. And yeah, this in terms of the speed, you know, talk about speed around the goal, the speed at which he got around the goal to make certainly the second and third save in particular. Very, very good.
And the other, so Nicholas Schmidt of Portsmouth. He went viral over the weekend for, I don't know, carnage, you could probably call this in the box at Swansea. So, Miles Pearce-Harris hit the bar. He then saved the follow-up, Schmidt, from Liam Cullen. Josh Key has then hit the bar again from that rebound. And then Schmidt has saved again. That was a follow-up from Zan Vipotnik. It was offside, but that doesn't matter because it was a good moment for him. But I think the save after that in another attack from Liam Cullen was probably the more impressive.
Yeah, the one down to his right was fantastic. I mean, it was absolute carnage. I couldn't tell whether he might have got a touch on the first one. I don't think he does when it comes off the bar. And then, as you say, it makes the two saves thereafter. But no, I thought the save down to his right, the speed, sharpness he showed to get down to that and get a good hand and put it around the post. Yeah, fantastic.
So on to the FA Cup. A few non-league heroes to mention, which we like to do because they don't always get a mention. Kettering's Jason Alexander, he made really good saves in either half in their defeat eventually to Doncaster. They were undone in extra time, but not before he'd stopped from Luke Molyneux and Carl Hurst. Harborough, their goalkeeper Elliot Taylor, who I think we mentioned in the last pod as well, in the first round when that was on. Eight saves overall at Reading. They lost 5-3. He made five very good saves. Lewis Wing, Charlie Savage and Jaden Wareham all kept out. And that one from Wareham was right at the death to take the game to extra time. And we'll mention Jaz Singh as well of Tamworth. So that was their second scalp. Of course, beat Huddersfield in the first round. But the interesting thing here was effectively his last three touches of the game. So he saved a free kick, one of those in-swingers, which evaded everyone in the box in the final. I think that was the last kick of the game. And then he saved two penalties after that.
Yeah, you've got to love the FA Cup. I know that everyone was tuned in last night waiting for the third round draw, seeing who got who. But it's great for moments like this. Obviously, we highlight them on the pod, which is, of course, the main reason or the thing that they'll be tuning in. They don't really care about
BBC. They've got no interest in all that,
but the fact that they're getting named on this. But no, there was some top performances. As you mentioned, Alexander, in particular, a couple of these saves. A really good one at his near post second half and the one first half down to his left. Top save this. And yeah, Jaz Singh, I mean, do you know what, even I suppose when you look back over your career and as a goalkeeper, there's often a lot of moments you'd rather forget, but you know, naturally there's always a few moments that every goalkeeper will remember and they stay with you for a long time, and you just know this will be one of those moments. And now obviously let's see how it goes thereafter. Hopefully they can get through another round or two, but it's kind of these days that they will look back on with such pride. And you can imagine, you know, as soon as the game's finished, the feeling in the changing room, the feeling personally as you're going home, seeing family, seeing friends, etc. It's something that certainly, you know, I was fortunate enough to play in a couple of games like that, and they do stay with you forevermore. So yeah, big well done to the lads mentioned.
Did you have a scalp? Let's not talk about Brentford Everton, because we've got plenty of time. Apart from the Everton game, was there anything else? I suppose Watford, you were always in the Championship, so a scalp isn't really...
No, but we had probably my breakthrough year. We made the semi-final of the League Cup, and we played against Portsmouth, who were Prem at the time, Southampton, who were Prem at the time. And I remember we beat Portsmouth 3-0 and then beat Southampton 5-2. So they were big in terms of the score lines. And I think the 5-2 took us to the semi-final, where we had Liverpool home and away. And of course, I got injured a week before that, and so I missed both of those games. But yeah, I remember those where it's just, the feeling when you come in after, where of course the league form is always where a lot of the emphasis is, because it's great, it's all good and well if you're having a good cup run, but you're not doing so well in the league. But I think that particular time we were doing okay in the league, so it was very much all about the cup. And I remember building up to the semi-final, as much as I got the injury. We had a few semi-finals when I was at Watford. We had another one in the when we were in the Championship. Alec Chamberlain was playing, the one where I played against Man United, and I feel like there's one more, but it was always, you could always sense you're building up to a game like that, the amount of media attention, the way in which it's just a very different feeling around the place as you're building up to the cup games, more press coverage, more things that you're being asked to go and do locally in the community or whatever it might be, because it is such a big thing. And you can imagine for a lot of these guys now, they'll be having a lot of that, and it's nice. You know, it's kind of, it is a nice break from the day-to-day league form and the day-to-day sort of training that you're doing, because naturally there will be a lot of focus, a lot of attention on this.
It's time for one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
So, I don't want to laugh at this, but it's quite funny. Nicholas Barlow-Capic of Peterborough. They beat Notts County 4-3. It was 4-2 up until the 96th minute. It didn't matter because Notts County weren't going to come back in the game. I think the final whistle was blown straight after the restart. But a calamitous moment for Barlow-Capic.
I felt for him. I really felt for him, because it's that one, he's gone to strike a ball long and he slipped. Like, it's happened to every goalkeeper. And then it's your worst nightmare after that, whether not only have you slipped, it could go anywhere. You know, you kind of hope it goes to one of your players and you get a few cheers from the crowd, and that's that. But no, of course, it goes straight to their player. He takes an unbelievable touch, then fires one from about 50 yards. It's got snow on it and it's curling into the far corner. And of course, you're backpedaling. You're trying to keep an eye on the ball. You've got absolutely no idea where you are. And again, you could run anywhere. But where does he run? He runs into the post. I just like, there's nothing, it sounds great, but there's nothing more. Once he'd slipped on the kick, there's nothing more he could have done, really. You're never saving this shot. And there's nothing differently I'd suggest that he does in that moment, because you've got to try and keep an eye on the ball. You're backpedaling and you're just hoping the footballing gods give you an ounce of luck at that moment. And it was like everything that could have gone against him in that 5 second period went against him. So I did feel for him. But as you say, they won. It was irrelevant. He's having a very good season as well, to be fair.
Yes,
so I'm sure.
A good side note that he's been very good since he came in.
So I'm sure that he would have been able to smile about it in the changing room, and he'll move forward.
He will. And someone who is rapidly accelerating forward is Billy Crellin. 3 penalty saves in Accrington's win over Swindon, rewarded with a trip to Anfield too.
Yeah, fantastic. So pleased for him. And I know we've mentioned him a couple of times now in the pod. And I just like stories like this where, you know, he really burst onto the scene, Fleetwood. There was all sorts of rumours around him as to which club he was going to join. And then he gets his loan to Bolton. And I think it's fair to say it didn't quite go to plan for everyone. And then it just feels like he's been hidden away for a period of time. And, you know, it's so nice to see that he's got that loan move. And not only has he got that, he's really made the most of it. Like, he's been so good in the league and now carried that on into the cup, and again getting lots and lots of plaudits for what he's doing, and his name's very much back on the map. And you know, you look at a goalkeeper's career and the different routes it can go down, and I think it's fair to say he had a setback after going to Bolton, but credit to him in that he's obviously gone to Everton, regrouped, sounds like he's done some great work with the coaches there, and now to bounce back in the way that he has, I feel like it's a name we're going to hear a lot of moving forward.
And finally, remarkable scenes, Richard, at Brisbane Road. Josh Keighley. So he conceded from a throw-in, it was a throw-in, and then it's got the smallest of touches, it's gone straight in. You could see how frustrated he was with his defence. That was just after half-time. However, do you know what? We've got a goalkeeper, Sis Claxton, We must have covered a goalkeeper who scored before on the pod. I'm just trying to think. We must have a goalkeeper scoring klaxon.
You might have to create one.
Should we put one in?
Put one in. I'll leave that with you. I'll be sure to listen back to this, see what you've done.
Okay. Can we have the goalkeeper scoring klaxon, please?
The goalkeeper is the goal scorer. Can you believe it?
There we go. That's done. Right. He scored in the 99th minute.
Yes.
To take the game into extra time late in Orient and then advanced to the third round. But what a moment.
Brilliant moment. Brilliant header. It's great ball in. And it's, yeah, just a really nice cushioned flicked header into the corner. I mean, look, this is the thing, you know, we talk about these guys. The outfield stuff's easy. Like, it just makes you think we can just put the goalkeepers up front. Like, if teams need a goal, you see this, the technique, the positioning, knowing where to be in the moment, little flicked header, clinical. Very good.
Excellent. Okay, Richard, we've blitzed through that. Anything else? I feel like you're here, so we should maybe converse.
We can do. Longer. I mean, how are you?
Very good.
Very good. You're looking well.
Okay, let's not converse anymore. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers.
Wait.